All right. This is WBAI New York, 99.5 FM and WBAI.org online. The previous program was Economic Update with Richard Wolf, heard Wednesdays right after the WBAI Evening News. Stay tuned for Off the Hook at 7 p.m., followed by Exploration, without the S, with Michio Kaku at 8 p.m. And this is your listener-sponsored community radio station, WBAI New York. We are still in fundraising mode, and if the spirit moves you at any given moment in time, feel free to donate to this radio station by calling 516-620-3602 or go to give to WBAI.org online. Text to donate, texting WBAI on your smartphone to the number 41444 is another option. And for those people who want to send a check or money order to WBAI, you can do so by writing out the check or money order to WBAI Pacifica Radio, 388 Atlantic Avenue, 3rd floor, Brooklyn, New York, 11217. Some of the ways of donating to your radio station, of course, WBAI New York 99.5 FM and WBAI.org online. Stay tuned for Off the Hook coming up.
Listening to radio station WBAI New York. It's 7 o'clock. It's time once again for Off the Hook.
The telephone keeps ringing, so I ripped it off the wall. I cut myself while shaving, now I can't make a call. We couldn't get much worse, but if they could, they would. Only your mom for the best, expect the worst. I hope that's understood. Monday, you know.
Good evening to everybody. The program is Off the Hook. Emmanuel Goldstein here with you on this delightful Wednesday evening. Joined tonight by Kyle.
Yeah, I'm here. Hi.
There you are. A bit hot on the board,
sorry.
There. No, it's okay. Your enthusiasm is welcome. And joining us over Skype, if I can bring up the volume properly, we should have Rob T. Firefly. Do we?
Good evening.
Oh, there he is. Okay, I'm picking him up. Gila, are you there?
Hello, I am here.
Okay, great. Two for two so far. Except we're having that issue with the volume again. I got to be careful not to put that there. All right, fine, no problem. And am I to understand we also have Alex?
Your understanding is correct, sir.
Now, Alex, am I informed properly? You're in a car driving right now?
You were informed improperly. I was driving and connected through Skype. However, I have arrived at my destination.
Oh, good. Okay.
And so I'm stationary now.
And may I just thank you for scheduling a trip in the middle of preparation for the show. It made things so much more exciting.
Anytime, absolutely.
Well, we haven't been on the last couple of weeks. And, you know, it's funny, 2 weeks ago we said that's the last week of the fundraiser, week number six. But we were wrong. The fundraiser continued. In fact, it's continuing this week as well. But this really is supposed to be the last week of it. The reason it's going on so long, 8 weeks is unprecedented, is because of all the craziness and insanity involved in the pandemic. You know, if we go on much longer, it's going to collide with another fundraiser, and we'll have two fundraisers going at the same time. And we've never done that before, so I'm not sure how that would even work. So what we want to ask people to do is support the radio station, support the show. The easiest way to do that is just give a call to 516-620. You know what? I thought I almost memorized the number. 516-620. I didn't write it down. Did anybody write down the phone number? Wow, this makes us look so bad.
516-620-3602.
Okay, that's what I thought. I didn't want to say a number of somebody who would be deluged with calls. That's always a bad thing to do. 3602.
You know, you couldn't blame me. I think I moved the
I had a piece of paper that had that note on it, and that's I prepared that a week ago so that this wouldn't happen. 516-620-3602. Just so people know from the start what we are offering tonight. It's basically similar. In fact, it's identical to what we offered 2 weeks ago. And it's in lower quantities because we're running out of this stuff. We have the Hacker Digest full set lifetime subscription. That's every issue of 2600 since 1984 and on into the future in digital form and an annual compendium. So 1984 is volume 1, 1985 is volume 2, and we're up to volume 36, I believe, from last year. All that is yours for a pledge of $150, which I might note is less than what it actually costs. We only have a few of those left in stock. $150, Hacker Digest, full set, and lifetime subscription. Your support, 516-620-3602, it supports the radio station. And we feel happy because we know that we're donating something to the radio station that is helping it out as well. You can also go to give2wbai.org and pledge online for that. The other premium we are offering is a 3-year paper subscription to 2600 Magazine. We only have a handful of those left. That's for a pledge of $50. You'll get 2600 Magazine delivered to your mailbox for the next 3 years, assuming that there's still a post office for the next 3 years. And finally, we have the Hacker Tote Bag for a pledge of $25. Kyle, you're very passionate about those tote bags.
Oh, yeah, yeah. These are basically a really durable black cotton bag that you can put all kinds of items in. And it has our signature government seal, the Hacker Quarterly government seal, and it is it's really notorious in many circles. There's a lot of different groups that fear this symbol. They know what it means.
Yeah,
they see the keyboards, they see the cuffs, they know. So you can get yours, and this is a great way to show off. It's got that print on both sides, so no matter what direction you're walking or if you turn and run away
yeah, there's a lot of that.
Well, you might need to, but I don't know how many various dust masks it holds. I don't know the capacity. I know it holds a lot of magazines. So get your Hacker Tote Bag. This is a great item. A lot of places are trying to phase out plastics. And if you're interested in not contributing to plastic waste, this is a great option. And it goes to a great cause. It's really just our gift. And you get the station, you get our show, you get a full vote in Pacifica, especially at these pledge levels, because it is beyond our $25 limit that makes you a voting member of the radio station community. So you get to do that. You get to participate. You get to support in our name a vote for Off the Hook, a vote for this kind of programming and discussion, and of course your ability to write in and share your thoughts on the kind of programming you're hearing.
So that's the Hacker Tote Bag for a pledge of $25. Also, we have the 2600 3-year subscription for a pledge of $50, and the Hacker Digest full set and lifetime subscription for a pledge of $150. All of them are running out. Tonight is the last night of the fund drive for us. 516-620-3602 or give to WBAI.org. Thank you, everybody who has called in and emailed with support. It makes a huge amount of difference. So, folks, what have I missed? What have you guys been up to the last couple of weeks? Alex, let's start with you.
I'm still in Pennsylvania. Yeah, just working my butt off. And last couple of weeks, I guess, you know, I think the last time that we were on the air was when I had to make sort of an emergency run into the city.
That's right.
And I haven't been back since. I've just still been sort of holed up in Pennsylvania. Our county here in Pennsylvania has officially reopened a couple of weeks ago, so there's lots of traffic out there. Things are pretty much, you know, well opened. I went into Lowe's the other day and completely freaked out and walked out, given how many people were not wearing masks and how many people were there.
Yeah.
So, you know, I'm still trying to, as best as I possibly can, stay in the house, quarantine, work from home, follow all of those guidelines. You know, I think that, you know, people often forget, especially when the sun is coming out, that this virus is still very much alive and still spreading, as we see from a lot of the other places that have reopened. And I wouldn't be surprised if, ironically, as somebody from Pennsylvania now, I'm forced to quarantine when I go back to my home in New York. That would be some real irony.
Well, it's more than irony. It's tragic. It's stupid. We see the same thing out here on Long Island, where people are walking around without masks. The tragedy is New York has done such a good job with depleting the numbers, basically stopping the spread. But all that is going to be for naught if we go back too early and throw all our precautions aside. We need to be wearing those masks. Those masks keep us from potentially spreading the virus to other people. It's not so much to ask at all. I mean, you know, I can walk around on a street with a mask on and, you know, I forget I have a mask on after a while. It's fine. It's not a big deal. I don't understand these people who say it's somehow an infringement of their rights to be told you have to wear a mask. That's basically to keep you alive, to keep other people alive as well. Look at the numbers. These numbers are not a joke. They're not something that are made up. This is happening throughout the planet. And New York right now, if you look at the maps that are color-coded, you see New York is green, which means that we're in good shape right now. And all those states that people have been warning about, the ones that opened too soon, the ones that said, oh, we don't have to wear a mask, it's not going to affect us. Yeah, how do they feel now? They're all the red zone. They're all setting record numbers. A lot of people are going to die as a result. And I don't know why we're not angrier than we are about this, because this is not some kind of made-up number. This is really happening. We're talking about hundreds of thousands of people that did not have to die, that will. And all for what? So that somebody could say, I don't have to wear a mask in BJ's or Lowe's or whatever. What are you gaining from that? It's just, it is, ugh. I'm struggling to use the words I'm allowed to use on the radio. I just have never seen such stupidity on such a grand scale. Now, all that aside, there are so many people that I feel proud of. That we were in a Black Lives Matter march last week. Everybody, except the cops, were wearing masks. Some cops were, but most of them weren't. I don't understand that. And to see people being socially awake, standing up for their rights, demanding justice, and at the same time, taking care of other people, including the people that are against them for whatever reason. That, to me, is as inspirational as it can possibly get. I don't see how you can be inspired by standing around without a mask, demanding the right to get sick and infect others. How does anybody get inspired by that? But that's the other level of demonstration that we are seeing. So folks, please, today it was announced in New York that we are going to be, as of midnight tonight, requiring people coming from these states that have a skyrocketing infection rate as a result of not taking precautions, we are going to require people to quarantine for 2 weeks. And I hope listeners out there pay strict attention to this. If you know somebody who's coming in from another state that is highly at risk, make damn sure those people quarantine for 2 weeks. And tell somebody if they don't, because that could be your relative. That could be you that gets sick, that dies as a result of their stupidity. And we have to stop being so damn patient with this.
Yeah, and call it for what it is, recklessness and inconsideration under the circumstances. And I really feel like there's a lot of people enduring and proving, as you said, in events like that, that it can be done. It's not a hindrance at all. And it is, in fact, a sign of awareness and something that can exist with our freedoms to assemble and so forth.
Uh-huh.
It's not that confusing. It doesn't have to be a subject of conjecture or some sort of debate.
Look, I don't know what people think the other side of this is. Somehow people like us are sitting back celebrating the fact that economies are shut down and that we're all forced to stay in our homes and wear masks when we go outside. That's not something any of us want. You think we're having fun with this? That's insane. This is what science demands. This is what the medical community demands. Listen to those people. If you don't want to listen to us, that's fine, because we're very opinionated and sometimes we can rub people the wrong way. I get it. But you can't argue with facts of science and medicine. Listen to those people, all right, and follow that advice. And if you do that, this will be over sooner than later. It was said that if everybody wore a mask in 3 weeks, the virus would have nowhere to go and it would peter out. But all it takes is one imbecile who doesn't follow these guidelines coming over on a plane or on a bus or something and not being careful and infecting a whole lot of other people. That's how it happened the first time. I was going back to March. This is, what is this, June?
Yes,
March,
it is.
April, May, June.
It is the end of June.
Yeah, it's not that much as far as months. And there were no infections. And then there were two, and then there were five, and then you saw what happened. So nothing has changed. That can happen again. That probably will happen again. Look back in history. Look at 1918. Look at the pandemic then. Look how the second wave is what really got people, because they weren't careful. So we need to do a better job. Don't feel bad about lecturing people, scolding people, and don't feel bad about taking these precautions yourself.
Yeah, definitely challenge stuff that is reckless and not what the guidelines suggest. It's impossible to be able to predict and do things well as a society in these phases and so forth. But we'll keep everybody updated on developments there. Good luck trying to find PPE right now.
Well, it's crazy because the sort of PPE we're talking about is, you know, cloth masks. A lot of stores say you need them now. People are starting to complain about this. But you can make a cloth mask out of, like, literally any piece of fabric you have around the house. Or you could, you know, buy one or get one. But the thing is, we were all doing so well in this city. Gila and I are still in New York City. We're in Queens. And everyone was pulling together. Everyone was doing such a good job. But over the past couple of weeks, people have been loosening up. People have been letting go. I know a couple of you saw the video that was going around last week of a bunch of people hanging out on St. Mark's Place, you know, drinks in hand,
yep.
Mostly unmasked. And it's ridiculous. I mean, the reason we are green right now on those maps is because we've been doing a good job. We need to keep doing that good job. Green doesn't mean we're done. Green means we're doing a good job and we need to keep doing it. And the real problem behind all this is that wearing the mask has become politicized. Believing in science and numbers has become politicized. The president himself told a reporter, I think earlier today or yesterday, that he believes that people are wearing masks because they disapprove of him. And they're doing that as a symbol, which led to all his followers ditching the mask. So this has become such a thing where we are not, as a society, acting in our own best interests. We're turning this into yet another just little brownie point that you can gain or lose in the petty debates and disagreements we have. And it's gonna screw us. I mean, Gila, I know you, yes. You left the house, earlier this week, and you were telling me about what things look like out there.
They're just, people are not masking as much as they were, and they just seem not to care anymore. We went to the laundry room in our building today. We were going to put our stuff in the dryers, and we encountered three neighbors. One had a mask on, and there are signs all over our building that say, when you leave your apartment, please make sure you have a mask on. And people just don't. And, you know, I've been reading things where people are saying that this is not too different to the anti-vax movement. It's become the same sort of thing. It's just, this is the anti-vax movement on somebody's face instead of a shot that you can't see.
Absolutely. In fact, in some of the hearings this week, the CDC leader, Dr. Redfield, was taken to task because he'd done a lot behind the scenes, and some of the representatives basically pointed out that he had not done a lot of public engagement and leadership on the national level around science, around guidelines like this, and especially in anticipation of needing a lot of people and a high uptake, in other words, of this vaccine or whatever comes of our efforts to get out ahead of this in the next season or next year.
Yeah. You know, this isn't something that has anything to do with the person that you're hearing the message from. You know, if Trump were saying the right thing, I would say yes, I agree with him. You know, despite my feelings about him, it doesn't matter. If you hear Cuomo say something and you don't like Cuomo, if it makes sense, say you agree. You know, there's too many people that simply can't grow up and can't get past their, oh, I don't like that person, so everything they say has to be bad. In this particular case, the way New York handled this, I think, has really worked out. That's why we have basically brought it down so that we are in, I believe New York just entered stage two. Out here on Long Island, we're in stage three, which means you can go inside restaurants now, and I think they can only be half full or something. It's still ridiculous, but it's what is necessary at the time. And we have to follow those guidelines. Regardless of what you think of the person that tells you, you have to follow those guidelines. Listen to somebody that you do like who tells you you should follow those guidelines, because that's what it's about. It's not about the personalities. It's not about the politics. It's about the science. It's about the disease. It's about us doing the intelligent thing. We know better. And other countries, particularly in Asia, I've heard that they have an easier time because people are more socially conscious. And here in the U.S., we pride ourselves on being rugged individualists, which is fine. But in situations where you need to come together and act collectively to preserve your very way of life, that's when it doesn't quite work out. So we need to get beyond that, work together for a little while, solve this thing, then we can be at each other's throats again. I promise. We'll have a great time as individualists fighting each other.
It's also fascinating to me. There's a story that came out of San Diego in the last day or so. This woman went into a Starbucks. She wanted to get coffee. She wasn't wearing a mask. The barista told her she needed to mask up or leave, and she had a tantrum. And she posted a picture of the barista with his name on social media and said, he told me I needed to put on a mask. I should have waited for the cops. I should have had my medical exemption. It's kind of blown up. Someone started a GoFundMe for, like, to tip this barista. As of a couple hours ago, it's passed $12,000.
That's
for
right.
this guy.
Uh-huh.
And it's fascinating to me because people are saying, you know, we support you. And then there are a lot of other people who are like, well, he didn't want to tell her to put on the mask. It was just his job. I mean, he might not agree with this, but I'm going to give him money because he was doing what he was told to do. And it's becoming a fascinating thing, at least to me, about people aren't, it's not a caring thing. You know, they're doing this because we have to. And even if, I guess, if you're doing it begrudgingly, you're still doing it, and that's good. But this idea of not pulling together, you know, you think about like in the Depression, in World War II, and when, you know, people were doing Meatless Mondays and they were, you know, going without for the greater good. We couldn't do that now, even if we wanted to, because people wouldn't participate.
Yeah, I think it's an incredible possibility that if you do the right thing, you might find yourself handsomely rewarded. And maybe that's what we need. That's the motivation we need to do the right thing consistently, because you never know who might be watching or who might be filming and labeling you as a hero. And I like to think that what we're saying here tonight, that's the right thing. So why not reward us by calling 516-620-3602, pledging your support to WBAI, getting the Hacker Digest lifetime subscription or the 3-year subscription or the tote bags, showing your support for this radio station, for what we do at this radio station, and you'll feel a whole lot better. 516-620-3602 or give to WBAI.org. Like how I work that in?
It's good. I also like to just, on this, if you're already a subscriber to 2600 Magazine, but you still want to support WBAI, don't forget that if you support WBAI at the $35 level, you can get a very spiffy WBAI station logo face mask. Looking stylish, supporting your favorite community radio station, and keeping others around you safe and healthy at the $35 level. Also remember that you can donate by texting WBAI to the short code 41444, and you will get a response text with donation instructions.
That's good news that those face masks are back in stock, because they went out of stock very quickly. Turned out that's definitely what people want, so that's good to know. And you can get yours, 516-620-3602, give to WBAI.org. The best thing of all, though, you're supporting the radio station. So, Alex, yeah, you know, you got us off on this whole tangent about people not wearing masks. What else have you noticed?
Well, you know, I did have to actually go to the doctor's office here in Pennsylvania fairly recently, too. I wound up coming down with an eye infection. I think, you know, one of the unfortunate byproducts of the coronavirus pandemic is that we often use things or consume things for, you know, far after their expiration date, you know, mostly food. I feel like we're all eating a lot of, you know, older food. We don't want to go to the supermarket. Well, I've been reusing my contacts, the same contacts, for the last 3 months, and came down with an eye infection. So today is the first day I'm wearing contact lenses again, but I had to go to the doctor's office in order to get a diagnosis and a prescription for antibiotics. And that was, you know, it was a weird experience for me to have to go in there, you know, wearing a mask. There were very few people there. Everyone was socially distant, though. Everyone was pretty conscious of it, and everyone was wearing a mask. You know, you don't fool around with that in a doctor's office. But the whole diagnosis while wearing a mask and everything, it was weird, but it worked. You know, we got through it. I got the medication, went to the pharmacy afterwards, just like any other day. And, you know, and I'm fine now.
Well, Alex, can I just ask one thing? You were at the doctor's office. Did you get tested to find out if you ever had COVID-19?
No.
How come? Is that not offered? Or it just seems like after all this, you should know whether or not you ever had it.
You know, they never offered it to me. I described the symptoms that I had in March, and they said, yeah, it sounds like it. You know, but then, you know, here's the other thing about it. Even if I took an antibody test now, you know, it could quite possibly come back as negative, because some reports are that your antibodies only last a certain period of time. So, you know, I feel like there are a lot of people out there who have had this thing and or have had symptoms very similar to the coronavirus and proximate in time to when the pandemic was at its peak in whatever their geographic area was. But, you know, looking back at it now, we may get essentially false negatives for having had the virus. But really, you know, does it matter? To me, it doesn't make one iota of difference in terms of how I go about my daily life. because having had the virus does not necessarily guarantee you immunity. So we all need to operate as if, you know, we may be carriers and still wear masks. Even if you've had the virus and you've been confirmed to have the virus, your antibodies may not be completely effective forever. The virus may mutate and you may be able to get it. You may become an asymptomatic carrier and able to transmit that. I mean, and this was a problem that came up, I guess, within the last week or two, was some information from the World Health Organization that asymptomatic transmission was rare, which they then had to walk back, I think, within the next 24 hours. So, you know, the fact that that happened and that there was information that turned out from a very reputable source that turned out to be wrong or misleading and had to be walked back, you know, this is just contributing, I think, to people's skepticism about the severity of the virus itself. And that's as the president would say, sad.
Right, yeah. And there are really a large number of different tests, antigen, antibody, as well as the active virus tests. But one thing I think I heard in the testimony was that the person who is asymptomatic as well as person who has symptoms, they have the same amount when they're swabbed or tested. So they're carrying as much and therefore can expose people without even feeling as though they are ill. And that's that chain of contagiousness and so on that will help spread it so quickly. And as we're experiencing and seeing a lot of reports of. But hopefully that stuff is more helpful than harmful as far as numbers and politicizing and just the technical side of dealing with such a Herculean task of combating a public health situation, a global public health situation like this. So we'll definitely be reporting more about this as well.
If I could just steer the bus into a different lane for a moment. We are still deeply involved organizing the HOPE conference, HOPE 2020. We aren't able to meet in person, unfortunately, this year, as virtually nobody is able to meet in person. But that doesn't mean we're not going to have an awesome conference. We're just going to do it in a different way, a way we've never done it before, a way that's going to be an adventure for all of us. But I have to say, I have never seen such organization. I've never seen so many people pulling together to make this thing work somehow, because our very future depends on it. It's just with all that has happened to us this year, basically losing two issues to the pandemic, literally losing issues that never made it to Barnes & Noble. Somehow, if you're in Canada, you probably did not get the spring issue of 2600 magazine because all of them disappeared. That's what we're being told. We have no idea why. Nobody is taking any responsibility for it, but that's just gone. We have to replace all of those. So all these setbacks, so many setbacks. So losing the conference on top of that, we would be finished. Fortunately, we're going ahead, and we have the support of so many people out there, people who have held on to their tickets, people who are buying more tickets. That is the only thing that is going to make us survive 2020. And we will forever be in the debt of those people who've stood up for us in this moment of real tribulation. So what we decided to do, instead of having a three-day in-person conference in late July, early August, we decided to triple the amount of time and make it a nine-day virtual conference. It'll start a week earlier. It'll start on July 25th, run all the way to August 2nd. And we are going to fill every single one of those days with all kinds of amazing talks, workshops, concerts, you name it. Anything that you think might be possible, we can probably do. And if you want to join us, if you want to be a part of this, visit our website, www.hope.net. There's all kinds of instructions there on how to get involved. Or you can email volunteers at hope.net. That'll get you in touch with a volunteer coordinator. We're looking for people that are interested in technology, that want to give interesting talks about hacking, about how COVID-19 may have affected the technical world, the world of technology. All sorts of things are changing as a result of this. There are so many topics that can be covered. We don't have time to go through them all here. They're listed in great detail on that website. But I do want to tell you, I mentioned that it's going to be a 9-day conference now. we decided, why not have a keynote speaker for every single one of those 9 days? 9 keynote speakers. We announced the first few. We have more to come. We're working on, we've been working on this for quite some time, actually. And we hope to have more announcements in the week or so ahead. But let me just tell you what we have so far. I'm pretty excited by what I'm seeing. We have Jerome Lanier. Kyle, am I pronouncing that right?
Yeah, the last part is, I think, French or French-derived, so it's Lanier, but I don't know. You can say it however you want,
You read a book by him.
Jerome Lanier, yeah.
You read a book by him when we took the Queen Mary II over to England last year. And basically, that inspired you to pursue this. And we asked, hey, you want to be a keynote speaker? And he was into the idea. He's an American computer philosophy writer, computer scientist, visual artist, composer of classical music, and he's considered a founding father of the field of virtual reality. So that's one of our 9 keynote speakers. Another, Cindy Cohn. She is an American civil liberties attorney specializing in internet law. She used to be the legal director and general counsel for the Electronic Frontier Foundation and became its executive director in 2015. Incredible person. Cory Doctorow, former keynote speaker of HOPE. In fact, we're having him back. He is going to be speaking about, well, whatever interesting projects or books that he's involved in. He's an activist in favor of liberalizing copyright laws, a proponent of the Creative Commons organization. I could just go on and on about all his accomplishments. Richard Thieme, he's a former priest, if you can believe that, who became a commentator on technology and culture, founding the consulting firm ThiemeWorks, author of syndicated columns, all kinds of interesting things in his life. And that's just 4. That's just 4 of the 9 keynotes that we're going to have. And that doesn't even count the speakers, the panelists, all the people that will be coming forward in one way or another. Some talks will be recorded. Some talks will be live. All talks will have a Q&A session that our attendees will be able to participate in, as well as workshops that they can attend and have interaction that way. There'll be what's known as a hallway track where you can interact with other attendees as well. It's going to be interesting. It's going to be different. It's going to be an experiment, and I can hardly wait to see just how it all plays out. Now, if you're interested in submitting a talk, if you think you have something to talk about as far as the world of hacking, technology, just something that you're involved in, that you're passionate about, that you believe a few thousand people might be interested in hearing, well, submit a talk. Submit a talk proposal to us. But the deadline for doing this is next Monday, June 29th. So if you want to submit a talk, do it by then. There are all kinds of guidelines. Just click on the speaker button at www.hope.net. Spread the word. Let people know what that you're doing this or that they should do this. Include a title, abstract, a short bio for yourself, and give us enough information so that we can judge why HOPE attendees would find your topic interesting and why you're a good person to give this talk. We're open to so many different ideas, and age is not a consideration. Where you are is not a consideration anymore. It was a consideration because you pretty much had to be where we were in previous conferences, but now you don't have to be. You could be anywhere in the world. And we're getting submissions from all over. We're getting submissions from China, from all over the place. And that's great. That's what I want to see. I want to see people from everywhere contribute to this.
Yeah, and a big key facet will be the interconnectedness and the ability to ask questions and get clarifications and interact as a community in this sort of huge experiment. This conference in a virtual realm will take on a form of its own, and we want everyone to be a part of this this experiment in keeping our tradition of coming together and discussion going. And the keynote I was talking about was Jerome Lanier. You were right about how to pronounce it. I don't know what I'm talking about. And the book, I wanted to say the name of the book because I think it's really interesting. It's 10 Arguments for Deleting Your Social Media Accounts Right Now. So
how did we reach him? I assume he deleted his.
I think there are people that still use sort of analog networks to communicate, which is in and of itself fascinating. And we were able to...
Oh, the telephone.
Semaphore, yeah. Flag wave. Uh-huh. Some kind of smoke signal was sent. And yeah, we're really, really excited about all of the participants and all the ability. You can ask questions. You can ask someone how to pronounce their name in a Q&A session as an attendee of this event.
I hope that's not one of the questions. But yeah, no, if you feel you have to ask that question, go right ahead.
We want much better questions than that. Yeah. So please participate. We're really eager to get as many people speaking and volunteering, sharing what they know. Maybe it's something you don't normally do, something unexpected. Get that submission in. We're really, really keen to give people an opportunity to share, especially right now when there's so many people looking for interesting discussion, looking to engage and listen and really hear what people have to say. And hopefully that's what this event's going
to
be.
And this is a great opportunity to seg into our next section of social media and technology. But first, I want to open it up to Rob, Gila, and Alex, if they have anything to say about HOPE.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, one thing I go through every time we do HOPE is when I'm encouraging people to submit, and I always hear once or twice, you know, but I have this idea, but I'm not sure if it's good enough. I'm not sure if it's, you know, of enough interest. Look, but
go ahead, Rob. No, I'm sure it's a good idea, Rob. Go ahead.
Yes, exactly.
Don't be bashful. Yeah, I mean, yeah, we mock and ridicule your ideas many times, but this might be the one that we don't.
Absolutely. You get what I'm saying, which is, yes, you won't know unless you submit. And there is no harm in submitting. We will not get angry with you if we decide not to go with it, if we go with something else.
We don't mock and ridicule either, just to point that out. I just want to make that clear.
No, absolutely. You know, sometimes a lot of people submit similar things and we have to choose one over another. And, you know, that gets into it. But really, you'll never know unless you try. And we highly encourage you trying, especially now. If you've never been up on a stage, if you don't think you could get on a physical stage, you don't have to right now. It's your webcam. We've all been doing this this video conferencing stuff. Most of us have been doing this for our work or just to keep in touch with people. And we're doing it this way. We're all getting better at it day by day. And now we're doing HOPE. I think we can hit the ground running with this because people know the deal. You can clean up your room or leave it a mess. You can present yourself however you wish, just as long as you have something to share with the HOPE crowd that you think is of interest. So. Get in touch. Click the speakers link on hope.net and get all the info that you need there. We also have ideas on how to do workshops. So there's a workshops link on hope.net as well. And you know, that's going to be a little tricky to do. You know, differently than we have before. Again, we don't have physical tables full of stuff that you could get in and play with. But we're figuring out other ways to do this. So. Check out hope.net, go to the speakers link, go to the workshops link, and if you've got something to share with us, by all means, share it with us. And we would be excited to have it.
Okay. Hey, I want to welcome Voltaire, who's joining us now via Skype. It's been a while since we talked to you.
Hey, how's it going?
Well, it's hectic and crazy, but otherwise fine. where are you located right now?
I am literally like 5 blocks from the radio station, but in isolation.
That must be weird, because yeah, we haven't been to the radio station since April, and no idea when we'll be back there. But we're going to get through, no matter what it takes. Hey, let's talk about what happened over the weekend with this crazy event that took place in Tulsa. I'm not talking about Juneteenth. Wow, Juneteenth was amazing. We were watching Fox 23. Don't ask how. Kyle and I were watching the aftermath of the Trump rally and people in the streets marching and demonstrating. And they just kept going back and forth from all these angry-looking people that were leaving the arena. And then they kept cutting over to the Black Fifth Avenue section of town, and they were having a party, and it was such a happy event. they kept going back from one to the other. One kept looking angrier and angrier, and every time they cut over to the party, it just got better and better. They had all kinds of cool cars and a DJ.
Yeah, it was just a block party and a really joyful celebration. People on scooters and motorbikes and playing music impromptu. Like you said, I think there were multiple DJ stages basically out of people's trunks of their cars and so forth. And it just, they kept cutting and the contrast, it was just really magical to see these sort of the leftovers of this rally, disappointing rally, I'm sure.
Oh, not to me, it wasn't.
To be sure, yes, no, for some, quite disappointing. But then to go back to the correspondent there and see the love and rejuvenation of what is Black Wall Street.
Anyway, so that's part of what happened in Tulsa. But the big story, of course, is that Trump somehow got victimized by either low interest, which I find somewhat doubtful, or some technological hijinks. I've heard reports that TikTok had something to do with this. I've heard reports that the K-pop movement has something to do with this. I'd like to open it up. Voltaire, I know you have some thoughts on the matter as well. What do you think happened in Tulsa?
I think it just sold out from empty from a, most of it was the lack of interest, but there were a lot of K-pop and TikTok fanatics that were basically reserving tickets that weren't going to be used, and I think that it did contribute a small amount, but I don't think it would, most of the investigative reporters that found that it didn't play that significant a role, but I think it is encouraging that these powerful youth movements are trying to, or using their political muscle to combat the Trump campaign and using classic hacktivist tactics.
Well, the thing that makes me think that that there were technological hijinks involved here, just looking at the messages that were coming out of the Trump campaign, with just past 800,000 tickets, the mass media was reporting over 1 million people had signed up, and that to me seemed very weird and suspicious. Right there. I mean, Oklahoma, 1 million people wanting to go to Tulsa, it didn't seem to make sense. And it's clear that the Trump campaign bought into this and really thought that 1 million people were interested. And I dare say most of those 1 million people probably were not actual Trump supporters. Does that make sense?
Yeah, I think that's what's so great about it, that they kind of set themselves up for failure.
I agree, and I think it's also very interesting to see how the message spread and where it went, and if the Trump campaign had looked at who was signing up for these tickets before they made these announcements, they might have noticed that something was amiss. I read an article a couple days ago in the Forward, actually, from a couple of teenagers who said, "We were involved in this." You raise a generation on Katniss Everdeen, you raise a generation online, these digital natives, and now school is done, so they're just kind of sitting there and talking to each other. And they said one of us is known to the Trump campaign as Holden McGroin. Kids were signing up as Holden McGroin and Harry Balls and all these old names, which, again, had they looked, they would have known. And it's just amazing to see all of this happening, and I feel like an old fogey to say that K-pop is very much what the kids are listening to. In a way, it's not my thing. I feel very old for saying that, but watching what the K-pop community has been able to do on Twitter specifically recently is they're overrunning these hashtags. They're getting into these live feeds and these cameras and really taking over the narrative in a significant way, which I think is really impressive.
Well, what I find to be really amazing about this is that you discover you have allies in places you didn't expect to have allies. To see the people following K-pop joining forces with Black Lives Matter and basically drowning out all the racist idiots in social media, that to me is a beautiful thing. You don't have to be into the music, but you certainly are into the spirit. And that is something that I think we forget sometimes, and we realize while these apps, they might be invasive, and I know TikTok certainly is, there's also great potential there for using them to accomplish incredible things, maybe things that were never intended when the app was developed. But I think, you know, 1 week we'll be talking about how, yeah, you shouldn't be using TikTok. But I think this week we should be talking about, wow, this is an amazing thing that you can do with TikTok. Does that make sense?
I'm fully with that, because it just seems like there's different conversations about the technology platforms, but it's having seen a lot of it grow and emerge, and like Gia said, you know, these like ALS challenge, you know, getting millions of people to dump ice on their head or whatever else is adorable but powerful. It is getting a group and an affinity group to gather around something, and that something can be anything. Use your imagination, and I think that's truly the hacker spirit. It's something we embrace a lot, using things the way they weren't intended, and coming up with stuff that genuinely, whatever the platform, genuinely makes an impact or a statement. And things like this, I think we should look for more about it, and use these platforms to our ends and the way we want, instead of them so often sort of controlling your behavior through ads and so forth.
You know, just to chime in there for a quick second, which is that, you know, I think we still maintain a very healthy dose of skepticism with respect to TikTok itself and its connections with the Chinese government, its massive hoovering up of personal data from your phone. So let's not forget about that. But there certainly is a lot to be said that these platforms can be harnessed for good, as Emmanuel had noted. One of the things that made me feel particularly old about this, too, and I had to look up, was in the first articles I read about this phenomenon happening with respect to the Trump rally in Tulsa, they kept referring to K-pop stans. And I thought stans was a typo something. I said, oh, my God, they made the typo again. And then I had to look it up. And it's interesting to me to note, and hopefully to our viewers who may be as old as me and not know, but K-pop stans is this really small subset of K-pop fans that are adept at manipulating social media platforms and manipulating algorithms and doing things like encouraging massive amounts of donations for particular protests or socially conscious funds, things like that. So it was this small subset of K-pop fans that was supposedly responsible for this prank that happened with the Trump rally. But the other thing that was really neat to learn about these K-pop fans is that this isn't the first time that they have meddled in politics or governments. If we think back to December 2019, which I know feels like several years ago by now, really only 6 months ago, there were a lot of protests and things happening in Chile with respect to wage disparity, healthcare, and sort of the general living conditions of Chilean citizens. And the Chilean government actually blamed a lot of that civil unrest on K-pop fans as well. And in fact, pointed the finger specifically at the K-pop stans in a sort of scathing 112-page report that singled out Russia, a couple of other, you know, massive celebrities, football, soccer stars, as well as K-pop fans. So, you know, they are certainly a force to be reckoned with.
Absolutely. Voltaire, quickly, because we are out of time.
Yeah, just so we don't get yelled at by listeners, stan is just another synonym for fan. It's basically the same thing.
Okay. Good to know that. One bit of good news tonight to report. Boston has voted to ban government use of facial recognition. That just happened today. And it's indicative of the many, many changes that are happening, whether it's tearing down racist statues or firing corrupt cops. All kinds of good things are happening out there. And I think we just need to join forces, stick together, be imaginative, use technology in cool ways. And, of course, support WBAI, 516-620-3602. Give to WBAI.org. And write to us, oth@2600.com. We will see you next week.
I've been taught to respect my elders and behave. Even if when they were young, they sold slaves. Truth and understanding is what I crave in the land of the thief, home of the slave. turn your page to a brief demonstration. Cause now in 90 is strictly information I'm giving, teaching on a regular basis. Today's lecture is about the races. We're not out to exaggerate or diss them, but show the symptoms and facts of racism. Understand, the races ain't equal. There's about five different types of racist people. First of the five different types of cases is the individual brought up racist. Here you have young men and women brought up in the great white way opinion. This opinion introduced by the parent to the civilized becomes transparent. A civilized man could look through the faces, make the analysis and see the races. Number two case which all must hear is the individual racist out of fear. Here you have people that fear the African and conjure up new ways of trapping them. Number three is the unconscious racist. Not knowing they're racist, they invade your spaces. They say, I'm not a racist, I'm not a bigot. Yet they allow it to go on and won't admit it. Number four is the money racist. The one that used the topics of sheer economics. They say, owning a business isn't for the black man. He don't want that, yet they went and took his land. Damn. That's like a rock in a hard place. You don't have your land yet, this ain't your space. America was built by every other race except the European. It runs this place. What a waste. America is doomed to be overthrown by the righteous real soon. But last but not least, racial prejudice is the black man speaking out of ignorance. Whitey this and Ching Chow that. It's not how the intelligent man acts. You can't blame the whole white race for slavery, because this ain't the case. A large sum of white people died with blacks, trying hard to fight racial attacks. The media wants you to think that no whites really fought and died for civil rights. But once we have a true sense of history, you'll see this too is a mystery. If black and white didn't argue the most, they can clearly see the government screwing them. Bo, 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 bo.
Lady Gaga with Smile, a necessary song for our time, because here we are in the midst of troubling events, the protests over police brutality in our city, the killing of George Floyd, racism and fundamental inequality, and the social distancing and masks and washing our hands to slow the spread of COVID-19. Through all this, WBAI listeners are coming through to support this non-commercial Pacifica radio station, broadcasting locally at 99.5 FM, streaming at WBAI.org. Thanks to contributors David in Burlington, New Jersey, Eleanor Burns from Babylon, who's getting David Rothenberg's CD, Fortune in Men's Eyes, Jane in Flushing, who likes Imhotep Gary Bird's Radio GBE, Mary Grambish from Dobbs Ferry, she pledged in support of Dave Kenny's Everything Old is New Again. Thanks for going to your phone. Thanks for calling 516-620-3602 and becoming a member of WBAI. Ed Coffin, thank you so much from Staten Island. You've donated in the name of some of WBAI's programs, Democracy Now!, Advocating for Justice, and Any Monday with David Rothenberg. Wayne McPartlin from Pleasantville, New York, thank you for donating in the name of Democracy Now! Anita from Brooklyn, in the name of Con Sabor Latino, and also Francisco Navarro from Yonkers, also a Con Sabor Latino new buddy. Daryl from Huntington and Jonathan in Brooklyn are new WBAI buddies in the name of all WBAI shows. And there's Mike Mandel. He's from Manhattan. He's a new WBAI buddy in the name of the Golden Age of Radio. Thanks, Mike. Janice Leonsis is a new WBAI buddy in the name of Caribbean Voices and Beyond, Isaac Ferguson Show, and Guy Woodward from Inwood. He's a new buddy in the name of David Rothenberg's Any Saturday. LaDonna Ashby from White Plains, thank you for becoming a WBAI buddy. In the name of Bob Law's program from Queens, you're a new WBAI buddy. In the name of Gary Null's show, thank you so much. Tamara from Woodland Park is now a buddy in the name of all WBAI shows. And Gwendolyn Thomas Steed from the Bronx, thank you for your donation. You say we can thank you on the air, and your favorite show is La Nueva Alternativa Latina. Wayne McPartland from Pleasantville, thank you so much. You ordered 3 WBAI logo face masks in the name of new subscribers, new WBAI listener sponsors, new WBAI buddies. You can become a WBAI buddy. Just call 516-620 to become a WBAI buddy in the name of your favorite show or in the name of all shows. Let us know if we can use your name. Site give to WBAI.org. Click on Buddy and become a WBAI sustaining member for any amount that you can afford per month. It helps WBAI pay the bills and know how to the radio station. This is listener-sponsored WBAI New York. Thank you once again so much.
Hello, WBAI listeners and supporters. Tune in Friday, June 26, from 10 p.m. to midnight for the first report of 2020 from the WBAI Local Station Board. This month, you'll be introduced to the LSP officers and to the PNB directors. They'll talk about their responsibilities, recent developments throughout the network, and ask for your ideas on how to build a stronger WBAI. So mark that date on your calendar, Friday, June 26, 10 p.m. to midnight, the first report of 2020 from the WBAI Local Station Board, only on WBAI in New York, 99.5 on your FM dial, streaming at WBAI.org.
And it is 8 p.m. You're tuned to listener-sponsored non-commercial WBAI in New York City, 99.5 on the FM dial, streaming around the world at WBAI.org. Time now for Exploration with Dr. Michio Kaku.
Welcome. This is Dr. Michio Kaku, Professor of Theoretical Physics at the City College and the Graduate Center of the City University of New York, and this is Exploration. Every week on Exploration, we discuss the fascinating world of science and its impact on society. And today, we're going to talk about the good news and the bad news concerning the coronavirus. You know, sometimes it seems as if the agony never stops. In several states around the Union, 20 states, almost half the United States, we're seeing a spike in coronavirus victims. And how can there be any good news considering the fact that we could be entering a second wave? Well, yeah, it turns out that there's speculation that even though the hospitalization rate is rising, the fatalities continue to drop. How is that possible? How can there be good news amidst all this bad news? And also good news on the therapeutic front. Even though we still do not yet have a vaccine, for the first time in history, it was announced just a few days ago, for the first time in history, we now have a steroid that can actually reduce by a third the number of people that are killed by this virus. This is big news. Not to mention the fact that the steroid we're talking about is plentiful, cheap, it only costs a dollar a day. That's right, a dollar a day to extend the lifespan of people that are put on ventilators. Fully a one-third drop in the death rate of those people on ventilators. This is really good news. And the question is, how does it work? And are there other steroids which can also reduce the death rate. And so this is very good news. And also good news on the genetics front. Slowly, we're beginning to understand the answer to the mystery. Why is it that some people can simply walk away from this virus with hardly even noticing its effect, and other people are put on ventilators for months at a time, hovering between life and death? Why is it that there is such a spectrum of effects of this virus on the human body? We're now beginning to realize that, yes, perhaps there's a reason why people with type A blood type, people who are diabetic, have high blood pressure. There's a commonality to all of them that we're going to talk about in today's program. And then we're going to leave inner space and go into outer space. NASA has yet another probe that it will shoot to the planet Mars. This one's different. This one contains a helicopter. That's right, a helicopter. And so if it is launched successfully in July and rendezvous with Mars in February of next year, we'll be able to zoom right over the surface of Mars just as if you were a tourist on a helicopter ride. And that probe will also make the first step toward rock retrieval. Think about that. For the first time in history, being able to get rock samples from Mars and bringing it back to the planet Earth. Well, let's just jump right into some of the top science stories today, starting with the good news and the bad news concerning the coronavirus. First of all, the bad news. The bad news looks pretty ominous. You know, over 2 weeks ago, we had Memorial Day celebrations, and you probably saw pictures of them, people without masks, people that are being very close to each other, yelling, screaming, and having a good time. Now we see the consequences, a spike in the number of cases. Three states have it the worst, Arizona, Florida, and Texas. In just one day, Arizona suffered 2,300 cases of the coronavirus. In just one day, Florida peaked at 2,700 cases of the coronavirus in just one day. And Texas, it set a record. It had 2,700 new cases of the coronavirus also in just one day. And people are saying that because lockdowns are gradually being phased out in the states of the Union, more and more people are venturing outside without masks, without social distancing, without taking to heart many of the guidelines proposed by the CDC. And, of course, perhaps you were in some of the anti-racist demonstrations in memory of George Floyd. Well, you saw the pictures. A lot of people there did not have masks and did not obey social distancing. So amidst all this bad news, how can there be any good news? Well, scientists have been cringing at the numbers, realizing that we're seeing a second wave of infections. But when you start to look at the fatality rate, it has not zoomed up yet. Now, of course, it's still early. It takes 2 weeks or so for the numbers to really come in. And so we're not positive this will hold up. But so far, it seems that the fatality rate is not spiking like the hospitalization rate. And why is that? Well, it could be, and this is just a theory, demographics. The people that went out there and made a lot of noise in Memorial Day celebrations, went to the beach, people that demonstrated, well, they tend to be young. And young people are not the primary target of coronavirus. The coronavirus, of course, affects everybody, but it is concentrated among the elderly. And most of the elderly do practice social distancing. They do wear masks. They just don't go out for any occasion. They're more careful about this because they realize it's a life and death issue. For young people, it's a learning experience for those people. They're not the primary target. They're going to survive, they think. And so the theory is that for the next week, the fatality rate is not going to spike, even though the hospitalization rate does. So when you watch the evening news, Of course, we're going to see more and more people coming down with the virus as people walk out. They disobey social distancing. They don't wear masks. But look at the fatality rate, because if that starts to spike, then we're in deep trouble. So also we should mention the fact that there is some very good news on the therapeutics front. First of all, we don't have any vaccine yet. The earliest time for a vaccine would be later this year or early next year. Trials are beginning now, even as we speak. Phase one requires testing the vaccine among a handful of people. Phase two, testing it among several hundred. Phase three, testing it among several thousand. And believe it or not, in the next few weeks, we're entering phase three in different countries of the world where we have 130 different versions of the vaccine being tested. But as far as you and me are concerned, we don't expect the average person to be affected by this till late this year or more likely early next year. So what's the good news? The good news is that an off-the-shelf chemical, a steroid that only costs $1 a day, has been found to be the only therapeutic which can reduce the death rate. 2,000 individuals were analyzed carefully. They were given this chemical, and people found out that one-third of the people on ventilators could get off the ventilator. It's called dexamethasone. It reduces the death rate by one-third for people who are on ventilators. And this is just not hearsay. 2,100 people were tested with this common steroid. 4,300 people were not tested with this steroid. And then the two rates were compared. And by golly, it turns out that dexamethasone does in fact reduce the death rate by one-third. For those people on oxygen, it reduces the death rate by one-fifth. Now, on exploration, we profile the fact that another chemical, remdesivir, can reduce symptoms of the coronavirus and make it milder. But the death rate apparently is the same. So now we have a steroid that can actually reduce the death rate by an enormous one-third. So scientists are now beginning to wonder, how is it possible? This is an off-the-shelf chemical. It's a chemical you can pick up at a drugstore. It's a steroid. And it seems to have magical properties. Well, the answer to that goes back to the question, what kills you anyway once you have the coronavirus? The coronavirus is a molecule. You can't even see it. It's a tiny, tiny object, so small that you can fit thousands of them in a hair. So how can something that you can't even see, that is practically invisible, how can it kill you? Well, believe it or not, the coronavirus actually doesn't kill you at all. It's the side effects from the coronavirus that kill you. What happens is your immune system identifies this molecule, the coronavirus, and then overreacts. It pulls out all stops. It begins to attack itself. You begin to drown in your own fluids. You begin to suffer because your body is attacking itself with antibodies. So in other words, this is called the cytokine storm. And that's the reason why the Spanish flu of 1918 was so devastating too. The 1918 Spanish flu outbreak killed more people than World War I. It killed more people than the coronavirus. And how did it kill you? Again, the same mechanism. You literally drowned in your own fluids. You basically attacked yourself, and your organs began to shut down as a consequence. For example, your lungs. Why do your organs have so much damage? It's because your body is releasing all the floodgates, trying to kill the virus, but instead is damaging your organs instead. Now, what do steroids do? Steroids, among other things, reduce inflammation. Inflammation, in turn, is partly caused by the body attacking itself. And so, bingo, here's the idea. Why not use steroids to dampen the cytokine storm? Now, there's a potential danger there, because if you administer it too early, it reduces your immune response, and you want that. You want the initial immune response of the body to the virus, because that, of course, protects you. But then the body goes into overdrive. It goes into overdrive, it begins to attack itself. And that's why you can't breathe anymore. That's why you're very close to death when the cytokine storm begins to kick in. And that's why I say also, if you have the opportunity